Tonight on Banfield, Trump the pack rat. Brand new evidence tonight that he was the one squirreling away those classified and top secret documents at Mar-a-Lago and then sending trash back to the National Archives instead of the presidential documents. And then, does President Trump need a female sidekick? A lot of people in the know think so. But when it comes to a running mate, are there still conservative female candidates out there that he hasn't insulted? And the veggie battle rages on in Pennsylvania. Dr. Oz is clapping back against John Fetterman and poking fun at Fetterman's weight. But hasn't Dr. Oz been on a crusade against fat shaming in the past? We dug up some old video and you're about to see it. And then remember when Kim Kardashian flashed her jewels and lost her jewels after a thief in Paris tied her up and made off with a cool $10 million? Now, 6 years later, the thieves are bragging too and saying if you flaunt it, they will come. You'll hear from them tonight. And later, it's a bird, it's a plane. Oh, come on, now it's a dog. Everybody can see that plain as day. Or can you? Why, there's a lot more than meets the eye in this picture. Find out what is really up on that hot tin roof. All ahead on Banfield. Hi, welcome to Banfield. It's Wednesday. And that means there's a boatload of new developments that are breaking tonight in the illegal and legal mess that Donald Trump has found himself in. And it may be getting harder and harder for his supporters to come up with a cogent and reasonable legal defense for some of his latest actions. Much of it is still about the battle of the boxes. And tonight we are learning a whole lot more about the backroom dealing between Trump and the National Archives and the FBI, all before that blockbuster search slash raid at Mar-a-Lago, including some of the conversations. According to the Washington Post, it turns out the National Archives had been going back and forth with Donald Trump for months. They'd been asking him to return the presidential records as per the law. Remember that, the law. The Post reports when Trump did return some of the records, the archive staff said this: the boxes arrived without any kind of logs or inventories to describe their content. According to a person familiar with the recovery, instead they contained a hodgepodge of documents, including some that didn't even come from Trump's time in the White House, a.k.a. trash. But some of the White House records had obvious markings indicating they were classified. So basically that means President Trump sent back garbage to the archives instead of all the material that they were asking for. So you could understand it would take them some time, right, to sort through all the junk and then try to categorize the important stuff. Also, it also means that there's one more set of eyes that had a good old peek at our most sensitive national secrets, eyes that were not supposed to have that peek. So there's that. And it also looks like the National Archives became very fed up. They just got really tired of the back and forth over the months. They felt that Trump and his team were obfuscating, so they sent him an email on April 12th. And according to the Washington Post, the email stated the FBI would soon examine the sensitive documents that the former president had reluctantly returned to the government from his Florida club 3 months earlier. That's not an email you want to get. Thanks for the boxes, but we're now turning you over to the FBI because we found, you know, classified stuff in there. But the Post goes on to say that the FBI would not only begin examining the classified docs in those boxes that went back to the archives, they would soon get wind that their attention was needed elsewhere too, Mar-a-Lago. And the Post writes this: they proceeded with interviews with others in Trump's orbit. This is the good stuff. Including valets and former White House staffers. Agents were told that Trump was, quote, a pack rat. And this is where it gets really important, folks. This is where it gets important when it comes to the law. They said Trump was a pack rat who had been personally overseeing his collection of White House records since even before leaving Washington and had been reluctant to return anything. Let me repeat that last little bit. A pack rat who had been personally overseeing his collection of White House records. Hoo-wee! A prosecutor is going to seize on that because it speaks to intent. And that, my friends, is a big part of the underlying crimes that the FBI believes Mr. Trump committed and that the FBI laid out in that now much sought after affidavit before they went and searched and seized at Mar-a-Lago. That's the affidavit we all cannot wait to see and wish we could see without any big black Sharpie lines. Because think about this. If Trump oversaw the packing of all those boxes of documents, there goes the argument that the General Services Administration did it. They're the ones who packed the boxes. Well, it was a real messy job. Gosh, they're the guilty party. And if his people are still insisting that it was just an inadvertent mistake, that some of those documents just got swept up in that chaotic exit, you know, from the White House. Oops, I'm sorry. Well, I didn't mean it. Well, that's problematic too. Because yesterday, the Post reported that there are a grand total of 700 pages of classified and top secret documents that remained at Mar-a-Lago. Even after Trump said he sent everything back to the archives. Even after Trump's lawyer signed a letter attesting that there were no longer any classified documents still in the storage room, the pool room at Mar-a-Lago, there were still 13 more boxes there in that pool room. Documents, that were not the kind of documents it should be. Dozens and dozens of classified and also top secret. They're called TSSCI documents. They're top secret compartmented information. It's a fancy way of saying it's the kind of stuff that needs to be kept under lock and key and Teflon and soundproof and cellproof. Get smart dome of silence conditions. But there is still that argument that Team Trump makes that he declassified everything and he did it beforehand. And therefore, he had no intent on keeping any dangerous contraband at Mar-a-Lago. Not contraband information, it was declassified. Well, the Washington Post addresses that too and says that no one at the archives, no one at the FBI, no one at the White House ever said during all these months of back and forth over returning that classified and presidential material that he'd already declassified it. No need to return it. It's declassified. He'd just done it with a bunch of fell swoops, one or two or 500, I don't know. But nobody reports that happened. They never brought it up. So, that is the giant sucking sound coming out of Donald Trump's case for both Trump and for his defenders. So if you are a lawyer on Donald Trump's case, there's going to be some serious overtime here. And there's going to have to be some very, very creative lawyering. And maybe the most important part of this is that Donald Trump doesn't have the legal protections of the White House anymore. For 4 years as president, he was able to operate under the guidance of the DOJ that a sitting president could not be charged with a crime, period, end of story. The DOJ decided that after the Nixon-Spiro Agnew grossness, that it would just be better to have that policy. Can't charge sitting president. Can't do it. Can't charge him with a crime. But President Trump is now Mr. Trump, and so none of that applies anymore. And that makes this next little wallop of information all the more serious. Because today, the Justice Department released a memo from back in 2019. You're going to have to just follow me on this one. It's a little complicated, but I'm going to try to make it make sense. It's a memo that used to be really, really heavily redacted, and it is not redacted anymore, which, you know, we love. It's the memo that was prepared for this man. He was then Attorney General Bill Barr, and it cautioned Bill Barr against charging Donald Trump in the whole Russia, Russia, Russia thing. That was the probe that Robert Mueller did to assess if Donald Trump conspired with Russia to help his campaign for president and whether he obstructed justice when that matter was being looked into. But now that the whole damn thing's unredacted, we can see that there were indeed some shenanigans. Barr made his decision not to charge Trump hours before that memo was even finished. And he said there was no underlying crime found by Robert Mueller that Trump had conspired with Russia. So therefore, with no underlying crime, there could be no obstruction of justice. There could be no charge. The thing is, that's not how the law works. Obstruction is obstruction. You don't have to have that underlying crime. So that happened, you know, today. Big day, it was Wednesday. It's only Wednesday. Could that have ramifications, though, today, Wednesday, or Thursday, Friday, or maybe September, or maybe 2023 or 2024? Could a new DOJ come after Mr. Trump if the old DOJ decided not to? It's a great question. That's a good thing I have with me tonight, Andrew Cherkasky. He's an attorney and a former federal prosecutor. Nima Rahmani is an attorney and the president of West Coast Trial Lawyers. And Sherry Jacobus is a former Republican strategist who is the host of the podcast Politics with Sherry Jacobus. Okay, Andrew, I'm going to start with you in that last question about the fact that the old head of the DOJ said that, you know, there's no underlying crime, so we can't charge the president with obstruction of justice, even though, and notwithstanding that whole Nixon business, right, where you can't charge a sitting president, he actually put that law aside and said, even with that, we can't go after him. What about the new DOJ? Can they?
Well, Ashley, I think what we're headed towards is a constitutional battle that ultimately is going to be resolved by the Supreme Court, because I guarantee that as many people out there that want Trump prosecuted for any number of crimes, there is going to be a defense raised that ultimately a president who's acting in the office in which he sits, so whether that's talking about the Russia obstruction allegations or whether it's talking about him taking classified documents while he's still sitting in the White House, those actions as the president are going to be tested in front of the Supreme Court to decide if a president is really subject to the criminal code for the acts that he conducts while in office. My position at this point, knowing this Supreme Court, is that I don't think the Supreme Court's going to have a lot of tolerance for calling a president a criminal for the things that he was doing while in office, connected to his office as president.
I think you're absolutely right, Andrew, about the Supreme Court business. I think you're right. I think there's going to be a lot of tests to stuff we never thought we were going to have to test. I'm not so sure, though, about that panel of nine making that determination. I will be looking forward to our guest appearance with you then. But just quickly, just button that up with the statute of limitations. Is there an issue with statute of limitations if the DOJ decides to come after him for that whole obstruction of justice in the Russia?
Well, I don't think the statute of limitations is the limiting factor, although it would be running short at this point. So that's, I think, the least of the legal issues.
All right, Nima, I want you to jump in on the pack rat business, because when I heard that there are valets and White House staffers who apparently said the president was a pack rat, and long before he left office, he was personally overseeing, you know, the collection of the material he wanted to take to Mar-a-Lago. Doesn't that take the whole intent thing to a whole new level? Because if he wanted to say, I didn't do it, I didn't pack the boxes, I didn't see it, it was inadvertent, is it if you're packing the boxes and you got all those witnesses saying so?
Actually, it really does, because the Donald Trump that was reportedly in the White House was doing the opposite, right? He's shredding documents, he's flushing them down the toilet, he's clogging the White House plumbing, or he was burning documents. Now, we have a very different Donald Trump, but the end result is the same. Whether he's on an episode of Hoarders, his advisors, his attorneys, they're telling him, you cannot do this. That gets inside his head. That's criminal intent. I'm a former federal prosecutor, too. That's very easy to prove. And when he's out of office, he's at Mar-a-Lago, he's getting letters from the archives. He has officials from the Department of Justice showing up and telling him, you have to return these documents. He doesn't do so. He doesn't return all the documents. He returns the wrong documents, ultimately necessitating the search warrant. So I think it's very easy to prove intent if the Department of Justice actually wants to go after Donald Trump. The question is Merrick Garland going to sign off on that indictment? We don't know.
Yeah, I want to know who the valet and the White House staffers were who were watching all this, and then, you know, what the circumstances were in their, you know, interviews with the FBI. Whew. I actually want to see Donald Trump's reaction to it more. But, okay, Sherry, there's a new poll that I found so interesting, because through all of this, I have been wondering how the country feels about it, right? There's, you know, channels on the left screaming, put him in jail. And there's channels on the right screaming, this is unprecedented and it's a witch hunt. So the new poll is News Nation's latest Decision Desk HQ poll. And it says that 61% of voters approve of this FBI search, and only 39% disapproved. But the question I have about the 39%, does Donald Trump have enough supporters in that 39% who will go to the polls and who will make it a
whole lot of hooey? No, I think you're going to find people very disappointed.
It doesn't matter. Yeah?
Yeah, you're going to find people being very, very disappointed. That's going to increase. As this information comes out and starts sinking in, those numbers are going to change, I think, quite a bit. Donald Trump is in a lot of trouble. And I'd like to make one note about the Mueller report. Robert Mueller testified to Congress that when the president leaves office, he can, in fact, be indicted for obstruction of justice. So I don't think we're going to have that big of a problem should this all come to a head. The president, a former president, can be indicted for actions that he took while he was president once he leaves office. So as this information starts sinking in to the American people and they start really learning just how deep in he was with the criminality, I don't think that he'll have the support. I think that 61 number, it's going to go way up.
So, Andrew, let's talk about that business about being President Trump and being Mr. Trump and the statute of limitations, which may still be ticking, but maybe not for much longer. There's also the notion that the president kind of joined the 700 Club with the reporting yesterday that it's not just a few documents that got swept up. It's 700 classified pages that are, some of them are the most, you know, sensitive out there that could have a spy killed or tortured for, you know, years, or could derail, you know, billions of dollars and decades of spycraft to get, you know, a program in place. So, you know, with that much material, it becomes harder for him to say this was all, you know, a mistake or it was a mispacked box. And it becomes harder to defend as a lawyer, don't you think?
Well, I think you're right in that it becomes harder to defend the idea that he actually took and knew that these documents were being taken. We keep calling them classified. You have it in the top of your show, the New York Times. It all says classified, classified. But that's the real debate here. And, you know, it's ultimately not a question of whether they were classified or not classified. Well, I guess that is the debate. But the debate is going to be what Trump would have had to do to declassify them. So, again, we're getting into the legal nuance of what makes them classified or not. They're all for him, ultimately. Remember, Donald Trump has this information in his head. So when we make the arguments about how dangerous it is to the country, certainly it is dangerous to the country if classified documents get into the wrong hands. But what we have to ultimately understand here is it's not just the documents, it's also what's in Donald Trump's head. So are we declaring Donald Trump a risk to national security? Some people would say absolutely. But what do? Jail him as simply because he has the information and he's a risk to our nation? He could go astray at any moment. He's the former president, ultimately, though. And I think that ultimately guarantees him some rights.
I'm super fascinated by the whole declassification thing, and I'm less interested in it, strangely, than I am just in the notion that you know they're classified, you wave a wand that your Constitution may give you to declassify them, and then you hold them. Like Jerry Seinfeld said, it's the holding that matters, because in the Espionage Act, it's the holding. Anybody can take, but it's the holding. And that's where the law kicks in. The intent to actually hold secrets, not even classified, defense secrets. So that's really where I think it comes down to. And, you know, Nima, juries, if this ever gets in front of a jury, juries want motive. The prosecutors don't have to give it, but they want it. And so what on earth could you possibly say in a court in front of a jury that would be the motive of a president to do this kind of thing, to hold those kind of documents?
I think you'd argue to a jury that Donald Trump thinks he's above the law. If any of us took these documents, we'd be in federal prison right now. And with respect to the classification issue, that's a red herring. The Presidential Records Act applies to all documents. Doesn't matter whether they're classified or not. They belong in the National Archive. The Espionage Act you talked about was passed before the government's classification system. It relates to defense materials. No judge is going to allow this classification argument. Maybe great for social media, but it's not a legal defense in a court of law. So he really has no defense.
Nima,
and that's why no reputable defense attorney.
Do you think like a jury could hear he kept them to settle grudges, or he kept them to sell them later for money, or he kept them for leverage, you know, later on, or maybe he kept them as artifacts, you know, to brag about? Do you think a jury could actually hear that and believe that of a former president of the United States?
If he's actually prosecuted, this is going to be the most politicized prosecution in American history. So if you're the DOJ, you got to weed out those jurors that are going to buy those types of arguments. You want people that are going to follow the law and make sure it applies to everyone. Doesn't matter whether you're a former president or Joe Schmo. No one's above the law. And if you get those types of jurors, that's what you need to actually get a conviction in a case like this.
And don't even get me started on jury selection. I had to go through OJ, and then I had to go through Casey Anthony, but could you even imagine oh, Lord. Peremptory. Okay, Andrew Cherkasky, Nima Romani, thank you so much. Sherry, I'm going to ask you to do a little more work and stay over to the next story, because after the break, as all of Trump's legal troubles are swirling, Paul Manafort says he is convinced that Trump will run for president in 2024 regardless. And some say Trump should pick a woman as his running mate. But is there still a conservative female candidate that Trump has not yet offended or insulted in some way? We're going to lay out all the possibilities, and we're going to go down memory lane. And then also, food fight! Temperature is heating up in the Dr. Oz, John Fetterman online throwdown. So who's going to get cooked? Hear the latest killer clapback next. Welcome back. If you ask the experts in Washington, Donald Trump needs a good woman. And I do not mean Melania. She is absolutely lovely. We mean a female running mate, a solid conservative leader who has chops and wears a skirt. Tara Setmeyer, who's the former GOP communications director on Capitol Hill, she was on the show last night, and she said this about that.
Trump is probably going to pick a woman, and we've already seen several Republican women that are vying for Trump's affections, from Kristi Noem to Elise Stefanik and others. So to Sarah Palin, even potentially.
A lady on Trump's ticket would add a whole new dimension to his campaign, and it would most certainly diffuse some of that sexist stuff that Trump has had to fight off in the past. And in the future, too, because he's still facing an open lawsuit on that front. It's a defamation case against a lady. I could go on. But there are four Republican women who are most often mentioned as possible Trump running mates. And you just heard Tara talk about them. Nikki Haley, Elise Stefanik, Kristi Noem, and Sarah Palin. So let's run down the chart here. Haley is the most prepared on paper. She was the governor of South Carolina. She was Trump's ambassador to the United Nations. But despite their close working relationship, and I mean close, plus friendship, they've said some pretty caustic stuff about each other. In 2016, when Trump was running, Haley said she'd endorse any Republican except Trump. And then during her official Republican response to President Obama's State of the Union, she said, took a real shot here. She said, during anxious times, it can be tempting to follow the siren call of the angriest voices. We must resist that temptation. And Trump heard it, because he fired back at her, saying, she's weak on illegal immigration, and she certainly has no trouble asking me for campaign contributions. Nevertheless, Haley joined Trump's administration. But then after the January 6th riots, she told Politico magazine, and I quote, we need to acknowledge that he let us down. He went down a path that he shouldn't have, and we shouldn't have followed him, and we shouldn't have listened to him, and we can't let that ever happen again. So, running mate material? Okay, let's talk about Elise Stefanik. At 38 years old, she has been a congresswoman since 2015 and has made a huge shift to the right. Since then, she backed Trump during his impeachment. She backed his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Trump is a huge fan of hers, and during her fundraiser for her this year, he said this, I want to congratulate Elise on her success. Man, is she moving fast. And that means at this rate, she'll be president in about 6 years. She's always been a friend. And then there's South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. She's nationally known. She's popular with the conservatives. But she took a bit of a hit when she said recently that she's comfortable with women leaving her state to get an abortion. She also recently said Trump should not be carved into Mount Rushmore. something that Trump had previously told her he dreamed about. And then finally, there's Sarah Palin. Trump endorsed Sarah Palin in her Senate race. She's been one of his biggest supporters. She's also actually been a running mate before. So that's big. Remember, she was with John McCain in 2008. So with all that, Sherry Jacobus is still with me. She's a former Republican strategist, host of the podcast Politics with Sherry Jacobus. So Sherry, the question there is, those are the four, but are they the four? Do they have a shot? Are there more I'm not thinking of?
I'm even having a hard time thinking of Trump running again. I don't think it matters who he picks as his running mate. The first thing people are going to be saying, well, why isn't it Mike Pence? And that'll be the thing on everybody's mind. And also, Trump sucks all the air out of the room. He's also got a lot of legal problems. He could find himself under indictment. I expect that he will be. So it just feels weird that we're even discussing these women. I don't think it would be anybody who's ever criticized him. We know that he's very thin-skinned. It has to be somebody who would totally kiss his ring. So that would be at least Stefanik. It has to be somebody who's totally in on the QAnon thing, all things MAGA, support the big lie, no matter what he says. And that's the only thing that will matter to him. It doesn't matter what advisors will say. But again, I think that's a big if he's even going to have any kind of a viable candidacy, given the fact that there's so much criminality surrounding him, so many legal issues. We have a long way to go before it's even remotely relevant to be having a conversation about who his running mate would be, whichever their gender would be.
Maybe you and me, but I think he is thinking about these things. I mean, if Paul Manafort's right, he is thinking about the run. He's going to run. So you can bet your bottom dollar he's having conversations with his peeps about who the running mate would be. Okay, I want to talk about the parlor games over Trump's possible running mate. Those actually, though, could be taking a backseat to some other political story. A big one that developed again today is the food fight between Dr. Oz and John Fetterman in Pennsylvania. The sparring between these Senate candidates has been like a Netflix binge. There was first the famous crudité video that Dr. Oz shot at Wegmans, even though he called it Wegner's. He made a very good point, Dr. Oz did, of saying that the cost of everything was going up and this was unacceptable. But he said that the cost of veggies in particular were going up, the ones that he needed for the fancy crudité. Take a look.
Yes.
I thought I'd do some grocery shopping. I'm at Wegner's, and my wife wants some vegetables for crudité, right? So here's a broccoli. That's $2. Not a ton of broccoli there. Guys, that's $20 for crudité, and this doesn't include the tequila. I mean, that's outrageous. And we got Joe Biden to thank for this.
Okay, so Fetterman threw some serious shade at that post, saying that Pennsylvania's actually called that a veggie tray, but not to be outdone. Oz clapped back, his staff telling Business Insider that, quote, if John Fetterman had ever eaten a vegetable in his life, then maybe he wouldn't have had a major stroke and wouldn't be in the position of having to lie about it constantly. That's what they said. So the fat shaming caught some people by surprise, especially since Dr. Oz in the past has defended people struggling with their weight. Back in 2014, he actually donned a fat suit to better understand what they go through. So take a look at this.
When you would look at the mirror, could you see yourself at all?
I would look in the mirror as I was wearing the fat suit and not recognize myself. It was as though someone else had invaded my personal space.
Walking by these windows and seeing a reflection of yourself, and all of a sudden, when you catch that glimpse, you recognize, you know, this is not who I am. I don't want to be like this.
What was the harshest reaction that you received?
The most painful thing I experienced was a mom with two kids walking past me, and she sort of grabbed their hands and moved them away from me, like there was something so wrong. I was such a pariah that she didn't want her kids in any way hurt by the experience of seeing me.
Okay, Sherry, Oz makes some very sound political points, but it also feels like he just can't keep up with the Gen Z comedy that Fetterman's doling out on a regular basis. I think the big question, though, is does that actually matter when it comes to the Pennsylvania voters? Do they care about how awesome the back and forth has been online?
Well, you know, the whole bit about the crudité, that was kind of funny, and that was sort of some good-natured poking, and things get a little bit rough in election year. But this business about saying if Fetterman had ever eaten a vegetable, maybe he wouldn't have had the stroke, that's pretty awful, particularly from someone who is allegedly a doctor and trying to get people to take him seriously. I think that's horrible. So he really stepped in at this time. It shows that he's probably not ready for prime time. I think that's probably the least of his problems, though. It's the joking around, but it's him. He voted in Turkey in 2018. We know this. He's not from Pennsylvania. But a bigger issue, I think, of Pennsylvania, you probably find this interesting, is since Dobbs, June 24th, the Supreme Court decision, there's been this big gender gap in Pennsylvania or of registration. And there's 12% more women registering to vote. Yeah. And out of all the women who are registering just now to vote in Pennsylvania, there are four Democrats to every one Republican. And these women are not showing up anywhere in the country in the polling. So Pennsylvania is interesting for a lot of reasons. But for Dr.
They
Oz,
sure this, aren't. This not, they are not showing up in the polling. If we're talking about abortion, they're like six or seven, you know, slats because, down in the issues that they find critical to them. And the number one is democracy.
But these are new voters. These are brand new voters just registering, so they aren't getting called for these polls. We saw what happened in Kansas. Yeah, so
I'll leave it there.
It's just real interesting what's going on in Pennsylvania and other places.
Well, I just know that we're going to have another Fetterman Oz moment, so you'll have to come back. And thank you for everything, Sherry. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
Still to come. It is today's version of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Instagram influencers flashing their bling for all the world to see. But there are Insta grifters out there too. And casing the joint has become all too easy just by scrolling. We're going to tell you the number one thing you need to remove from your feed right away. Plus, are your eyes deceiving you? Is it really a dog that's up there on that hot tin roof? Coming up, the remarkable optical illusion that will dog you for days.
346-6061.
For 300 million people, Kim Kardashian is entertainment with a capital E. She is their guide to fashion and gossip and culture and even news. For many, she represents their hopes and their dreams. They are her Instagram followers. And before 2016, they were treated to a cornucopia of her wealth and her privilege, all wrapped up in millions of dollars worth of jewels. And then she was tied up and robbed in her Paris hotel, and she lost $10 million worth of those jewels. Since then, she says almost everything you see in pictures is either borrowed, fake, or stored somewhere safe. The robbers are talking too, and it seems they have absolutely no regrets about what they did to her. In an interview with Vice News, a man named Yunus Abbas dropped a bit of a bombshell. He was one of the 12 men who tied Kim up and robbed her, and he said, "Guilty? No, I don't care. She was throwing money away. I was there to collect it." And that was that. He added with a chuckle, "They should be a little less showy towards people who can't afford it." That was his rationale. If the "they" he's referring to means the thousands of influencers who are every day parading around on Instagram, basically showcasing to robbers what could be theirs for the taking, you got to admit, he's got a point. A point my next guests say is also a big problem, because Instagram, in their view, is going in the opposite direction, with more braggadocia and more easy targets. How do they know? They feel like targets themselves. You're going to meet them next. Welcome back. If you make your living on Instagram, you more often than not open up your life for all to see, and that can be worth bank. My next guests have a 500,000 followers between them, but the risks of what they do are only just now starting to really crop up. Stacey Freeman has 200,000 followers. She is a modern mom and a travel and fashion influencer. And Bianca Jade has 330,000 followers who come to her for her health, beauty, and fitness tips. All right, Bianca, I'd like to start with you because I know that you've actually been burglarized in the past, albeit before you were an influencer, but you know how it feels and you know how scary it is. What is the one thing that everybody watching right now needs to do right away, the very first thing they need to do? What do they need to take off their feed?
They need to stop posting where they are at that very moment in real time, because what happens is you become tracked via your social posts. And in that way, people can track your every move versus Instagram, TikTok, or whatever platform you're using.
Yeah, good idea, because it just basically says my house is available. Stacey, you know, Kim Kardashian was... She was very traumatized by what happened to her. Understandably, I can imagine going through that. The thief, however, is just a jerk. I mean, beyond jerk. He's saying all sorts of things. This is what he said about the Kim thing with Vice News. He said, I went on the internet, and it's true. I saw her jewelry. I saw her ring. I saw that she showed it everywhere, and we knew this information through social media. But I'm wondering why this wasn't a wake-up call for more influencers, given that this is like 6 years ago it happened.
You know, I think there's a lot of people who just feel this need to continually put out more and better and keep up with the Joneses. And there's like this competition on social media. And so I think it's really about taking a step back and thinking about like what really matters in life, and material things really aren't the thing that matters most.
Yeah. And what it seems to be, though, I mean, the weird thing is, Bianca, that, you know, Kim decided that she was going to start masking all this stuff. No longer was she going to be wearing anything real on the red carpet. And she said, you know, she's done a 180. She said, it's all fake now. It's either friends or it's borrowed or it's in a lockbox, not in my home. But I wonder, Bianca, if Instagram isn't about all the glitz and glamour. Like, if you take the glitz and glamour away, what else is there?
Well, I mean, it just depends. It depends on what kind of influencer you are. And the one thing I can say is that as influencers, we are here to show. We're also here to educate. We're also here to give advice, you know. But for the most part, we're here to show. And that's why people are looking. So to me, it's a little bit ridiculous, you know, saying that influencers should be less showy. If you are a luxury and, you know, jewelry focused influencer, that's what you're going to show. And Kim Kardashian is legitimately the first digital fashion influencer. So she's going to show, you know, the best fashion and jewelry. And that's what we want from her. So why should she stop? I think it's just a matter of being smarter and more careful. And I think she's done that, especially now that she has kids that she doesn't want to endanger.
Yeah, smarter and careful. Not everybody has, you know, the security that Kim Kardashian might have. They're even more vulnerable to these leeches. Okay, Stacey, there's a 19-year-old kid in Philadelphia, and he posted about inheriting money. Oy. So I guess at 2:30 in the morning, a bunch of thieves broke into his home in ski masks. Three guys. They got a Rolex. They got two gold chains. They got cell phones. And it makes you wonder, if you're that guy, you're not an influencer, why are you making your account public? Why not just keep it private for, you know, the people that you know?
I mean, I do think there is a level of people think maybe putting your world out there like that is going to make you more popular or bring you more validation. And so perhaps that person wants to show off, you know, especially as a young person. I do think there's a lot of this need for validation from an external world. And so you want people to see, you know, your wealth or your whatever you have going on. So I think, again, it's really about thinking what matters most and ultimately kind of got to keep that stuff under wraps.
Yeah. And Bianca, I know that you snoop on your followers, which I think is brilliant. It's hard, though, once you get as many followers as you have, you know, to snoop on them and see who they are and what, you know, whether they're private accounts, etc. But I'm really interested, Bianca, in what we're supposed to do about our kids, right? They're doing their thing. It is next to impossible to get them to put down their phones to start with. But when they shoot these videos, inadvertently, they could be showing all sorts of stuff in your home, a beautiful painting, a lovely car, the address, you know. What are we supposed to do to make sure our kids understand what you're doing could actually hurt or kill us?
I think that's a conversation, you know, families have to have together. I don't have children, so, you know, that's not something that I have, you know, had to deal with yet, but most of my friends have kids and they limit, you know, the amount of time that they have on the phone, or they allow their kids to use their phone supervised, with those platforms also being supervised. So the parents will log them in and also log them out and watch what they're doing while they're using the platform. So, you know, since I'm not a parent, I can't really be the authority on this, but I can say that, you know, there have been many moments where I've woken up in the middle of the night and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have a home tour on YouTube and people can easily find out where I live. And just the other day, actually, someone broke into our building. So being a public figure, it carries enormous risk, and you have to be prepared to deal with that.
Yeah. I have to wrap it there, but guys, thank you. Stacey Freeman is, she can be found at Posh in Progress on Instagram, and Bianca Jade can be found at Bianca Jade on Instagram. Thank you, ladies. Appreciate it. Have you back.
Thank you.
Okay, coming up. Can you trust your lying eyes, especially where a cute little doggy is involved? Because I want you to place your bets on what's really going on in this picture and let your imagination run wild, because we're about to blow your minds. Like a magic trick, like the next guy, even though I'm pretty convinced it's not real magic, you know. Nonetheless, I'm all in on the optical illusions, right? Which is why this little video from Rio de Janeiro caught my eye. Because I would bet my house that that is a puppy dog up there, chilling on that roof. Until a little hiss gets under his skin, and that puppy dog magically becomes, wait for it, becomes a, wait for it, cat. Oh, it's a kitty cat. It's a cat on a hot tin roof. And that is super duper freaky, because it is really, really hard to see the cat when you're looking at the dog. But then it's really, really obvious that you're seeing a cat when he pops up his little ears and he looks around. But don't let anybody send you that video online and think it's a dog. It ain't. It's a cat. It's going to give you pause. Tomorrow, there's a new video out, folks, about how great it is that you should move to Russia and you can eat McDonald's. We're going to tell you exactly what it's like in Russia. See you tomorrow night.